Welcome back to the Jet Press Podcast. My name is Justin Fried, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Mike Luciano. Mike, it is, 8 days away from the 2024 NFL Draft? A lot is going on. How are you feeling today, buddy?
Well, now that you said 8 days, it reminded me I really got to get that mock draft up by Wednesday, and I am very far behind on that. I got all the picks made, but I still got some explanations to do as to why the picks are happening. So before I get that done, let's go and tide you over with some Jets draft talk. We're going to do kind of a more robust mock draft going through all seven rounds during next week's show. We're also going to probably be around on like Friday and Saturday just to react to what the Jets have done, who they took in the first round. Maybe it'll be someone that gets a little bit more approval than Will McDonald did last year. Maybe it'll be someone who could be even less. Maybe they take a kicker in the first round. Who the hell knows?
No, don't even. I mean, honestly, there's still a chance that they draft an edge rusher. I'm not convinced they're not going to do it.
Hey, you know what? Raiders took Janikowski in the first round. He was their kicker for like 20 years. That's all I'm saying.
Still a bad pick. Still a bad pick.
He was pretty good, though, Janikowski. But let's go talk about mostly, you know, actual prospects are going to take linemen, tight ends, maybe moves they can make, some of the bold variety, as some of you have probably already seen from the title of this year video, what we're doing. And we also got some kinetic aesthetic changes because the Jets have some new uniforms, brand sparkly, spanking new uniforms. One of them you already saw last year, but now they fully committed to that bit. We'll get into that, but you can always find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Google Podcasts, wherever you go for it, we are there. And we're on YouTube at the Jet Press. If you want to just support the show, you can do it by subscribing. You can do it by liking the stream. Both of those things actually do have a tangible benefit. They do really help. So that's a good way to show your support. But never mind all that, Justin, because we are going to go dive right into some new uniform changes.
Let's do it.
If you pull it up on the screen here. Those are your 2024 uniform set for the New York Jets. They committed to that throwback-ish uniform. Like, it's not exactly the 80s look, but it's close to it, where you got just the regular block lettering on the front. You got less like a military green, like the Parcells one, a more kind of a shiny metallic, not the Kelly green, not like Reggie White era Eagles, but closer to that. And they still keep that, what do they call it, stealth black or something like that, the weird names for the colors.
Yeah.
Gotham green or something like that.
And the spotlight white, I think.
I just call it regular green and white. What do you got
to do? You have to brand it, Mike. You have to brand it. That's how
they're making up their own colors. Can you even do that? Is that even possible to make up a color?
I'm sure.
Or have the colors been created already?
That's a fair question. I mean, so, I'm sure it's a spectrum, right? You could always get more.
Yeah, I know, but like it'll exist naturally in nature.
I guess there are infinite colors. So God,
that's a philosophical argument for another day. Let's just go look at these uniforms because I'm thrilled by these. I hated one of the old uniforms. I didn't like the black with the old uniforms, and I didn't like New York across the front. Like, yeah, we know you're in New York. Like, we get it. It seems like a very college thing to do. Seems like a very arena football league thing to do. Felt like I was watching. What was it? That old team? Was it the Gladiators? Was it an old AFL team in New Jersey or the Red Dogs or something like that? Sure. That's what it felt like I was looking at. This looks a little bit cleaner, a little bit more professional. They went back to that throwback Jets logo, which, thank God, they actually have a logo of a plane. Yep. It's not like the team's named after a plane or something like that. They finally got some plane motifs in their uniforms. I really like this. And I think the Jets realized, too, when they came out with that white throwback that Aaron Rodgers was supposed to play in last year, and then we know what happened with that.
He did sort of play
in. Did extremely brief. Blink and you miss it, but he did. Literally blink and you miss it, but I feel like they realized, like, okay, we struck gold here. Let's just fully go in on this.
See, I've never been like a big uniform or jersey guy. I feel like I've said that before on the show, or I've said it on Twitter. Like, I don't care too much, right? Like, I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, you know, just win games, right? Like, yeah, sure. People care about jerseys and uniforms. Awesome. Let them care about it. They're the ones buying the merchandise. They're the ones watching teams. That's cool. I will say, if you can't tell, if you're watching this video, I do enjoy flags sometimes. I am a flag nerd. And one of my biggest gripes with flags, with certain flags, is when they have writing on
it. That's an amazing way to start a statement.
I'm so serious. One of my biggest gripes that I have with certain flags is when you have writing on it and you're basically like, oh, this is where it's from. Like the California flag is awesome, but it says California Republic. We don't need that. We know we're supposed to know this is the flag of California just based on the logo. And I feel the same way about sports logos. We don't need, and sports uniforms. We don't need the whole like New York there on the jersey. So you're 100% right, Mike. Get rid of that. We want to know this is the Jets logos. We don't need to know. We don't need you to tell us that this is a team from New York. Same thing with the logo. I'm so happy it's not just an oval now, because at least they have an actual plane, an actual jet in the logo. It's not just an oval with the team name, with the New York Jets. So yeah, I think this is better. I think it's an upgrade. I'm never going to be one that cares too much, but I think they look really nice. I think my favorite might be the green on white, like the green jersey and the white pants.
Totally, totally. So
those are really, really, really nice. The blacks are still, you know, the black jerseys are whatever. The black uniforms are fine. They're not my favorites. I don't love the all greens either, but I think the green and white combo really works.
The white with the green pants. I don't like all white uniforms. I don't know if I've said that before, but
that said, I know we talked about this earlier, Mike, before the show. I wouldn't have minded if they had a white helmet. I think the white helmet, especially with like the all white, can look really, really nice. Or even with like the white jerseys, I think it contrasts well. But again, I'm never going to be one that cares too much. I like the logo.
They're not menacing. White football helmets need to be, they need to give some sort of look.
I don't need them to be mad. I just want it to look cool. I want it to look slick. I want it to look nice. I want it to be aesthetically pleasing when I'm watching. Yeah, I like the logo. The logo is the biggest improvement to me, because that logo before was probably one of the worst in major four sports. It literally said nothing about the Jets. It was just an oval with the name of the team in it. That's boring. That's lame. This is a lot better.
And it didn't even look, it would be one thing if it was like football shape, but it didn't even really commit to that.
No.
To that bit enough. Like, I think a good point of comparison, if I could use a visual aid here,
go for it.
Is I got myself, this is from Jet Press guest analyst Dominic, who you may have saw from the Christmas show.
Sure.
He is really into collecting football cards. I think this kid's almost exactly like me, because he has a big binder and he organizes them by team. Like this page is for Jets, this page is for the Chargers or whatever. He gave me a Mark Gastineau card, because he knew that I'm a Jets fan, obviously. I think he'll shake the Lions eventually, but he's got the Lions now. He's also a Blue Jays fan, because he likes Vladimir Guerrero. So he's all over the place.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at this is the old mid-80s Mark Gastineau era. And I mean, it looks pretty similar. It just, they kept all the good parts of it, I feel like. This just looks a little, like the numbers are way too big, but
they modernized it. They modernized it.
Another change I love is the font too, because it felt like with the number font, it looked like those Falcons uniforms that they got rid of.
Oh, the gradient ones?
No. The ones before the gradient ones.
Oh, okay.
Like when they went to the Super Bowl. Mm. Like Julio Jones number 11, because the way the numbers looked, it just looked like a big pause sign. I always thought like on his chest. Like, and it looked weird for Sauce Gardner having number one. He just get that one like stripe down the middle. So
yeah.
Glad they got rid of that. And no matter what the Jets do on the field, they'll at least look better when they're doing it. So perhaps 7-10 can at least feel a little better now that they got some pretty cool threads.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
That last jersey, there's like the last uniform set has to be one of the least successful uniform sets in NFL history. Like the Jets had them, what, for 5 years?
Didn't 2019 have a single, was the first year.
Didn't have a single winning season. They won two games one of those years. I mean, that's just awful. Like, just
they never won more than seven games in a season.
I put this out there on Twitter. Mike, what is your favorite memory of that uniform set, of that era?
I don't know about favorite, but in terms of like most memorable, like for good or bad, and not even counting like Rodgers last year,
yeah,
would probably be during the failed Trevor Lawrence tank when they blitzed eight on a Hail Mary and then the Raiders beat him.
That, I got some of those responses. My answer was the Mike White game. It was in the all black jerseys, which are not my favorites, but that's my favorite memory of that era, which is saying a lot that my favorite memory is of a backup quarterback winning a game. Like, but it's
it immediately ended the Zach Wilson era, because if he came out and struggled, I'm like, okay, this team just sucks. And then Mike White in his first game ever throws for 400 yards. I'm like, oh, Zach Wilson just sucks. We know it's him. That's good.
People also threw out obviously it's a little tainted now given how Jamal Adams' tenure ended, but Jamal Adams ripping the ball out of Daniel Jones' hands. That was pretty awesome at the time. That was 2019, I think.
That was.
So that was in those
jerseys. With the stiff arm on Tyreek was pretty cool.
Yep, that's a good one. But we're really digging here. So hopefully with these new
individual plays from week six games, that's right. How.
Hopefully we're talking about playoff wins with this, or just at least playoff games with these next uniforms.
And the best way to do that, to get themselves in playoff shape, is to draft well. And they have a really unique opportunity. As we've said before, the Jets are a contender with a top 10 pick. So I know fans want the offensive line. Even though fans were screaming about an all-in draft last year, now they're apparently okay with taking an offensive lineman at 10 who's not going to play as a rookie, which is not a very all-in move. I don't know how this fan base operates sometimes, but let's move past that. Because in my opinion, the all-in move is to get Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia. When we've discussed Bowers on this show before, both the pros and cons of taking him, taking a tight end that high just philosophically. How do you mix him in with Tyler Conklin? Is Bowers more of almost like a big slot receiver given his skill set? There's a lot of moving parts to Brock Bowers, but he still seemed like the most likely name. And in a recent mock draft, Peter Schrager, now normally everybody puts out a bajillion mock draft. I've done it. You've done it. Insiders do it. Everybody does it this time of year. But Peter Schrager has become notorious, I guess, in a good way. She could be notorious, could be a good thing.
Sure.
So not like in a bad way, but notorious for being super accurate with these mock drafts. A lot of times you go look at who got the most picks right, it's Peter Schrager is up there. And he's a pretty plugged-in guy.
With the Jets,
he's been hammering that the Jets are in on Bowers and that they're going to take Bowers. So looking back at it, I'm happy with it. I know that offensive line seems to be what fans want just because – for some reason, no team ever has a good offensive line, even though the Jets got like three or four new starters this year. Apparently, that's not good enough, and they want another guy. And I get that there's risk involved with two older tackles, Tyron Smith, Morgan Moses. But you know what? Cross that bridge when we come to it, because tight ends of Bowers' caliber don't really come into the league every year. Every year, there is a pretty promising group of tackles. I know we're saying that offensive line play in general – is like harder to come by, really good offensive line play because of the CBA too, because there's less practice time. It's harder to get certain technical things down. But I mean, how many times do you go into a draft and there's like two first round offensive linemen? There's always a good crop in there. Very rarely are there tight ends like this. And it's very rarely if everything goes well, the Jets can be picking at number 10 overall. So if they don't get Bowers, this might be their best chance in a couple years to pick a high-end pass catcher. Mm-hmm. So I'm all in on Bowers. I think he's one of the safest players, I think, is why I'm really in on him. Of all these years of the Jets going boom or bust and Mekhi Becton and Zach Wilson, where, oh, if it works, it's great. If it stinks, we're all getting fired. Part of me just wants some stability. Just wants to chill out and draft a guy who I don't even – you could debate his potential of how good he really is, but – I think in terms of if you had to pick one or two guys where you're saying, is there going to be zero chance they're bad? I feel like he might be one of those guys. Maybe him, maybe Marvin Harrison, and then maybe Joe Alt. I feel like those are the three guys where you're like, all right, I don't know how good they'll be. Mm-hmm. I think there's zero chance they'll be bad. And I think that should be really appealing for the Jets.
I agree. And I've been saying that a lot of the offseason, that the Jets should be focusing on high floors, high floor players, because a lot of what they've done this offseason is they brought in guys with a high ceiling and they've significantly raised their ceiling. But you look at Tyron Smith, you look at Morgan Moses, they're coming off injuries. You look at Elijah Vera Tucker's coming off an injury. Of course, we don't know what Aaron Rodgers is going to be, 40 years old, coming off a torn Achilles. So you want to raise that floor in any way possible. And I do believe that Brock Bowers has one of the highest floors of any player in his class. Really quick, just I wanted to go through Peter Schrager's like Jets mock history, because it's pretty crazy. Dating back to, what I think, 2019, he's gotten all but one pick for the Jets right in the first round. 2019, he had him taking Quinnen, which, fair, a lot of people did. I don't think that's a shocking one. 2020,
you can see Quinnen from space, right, blowing past guys. So
2020, he had him taking Mekhi Becton. That's a little more notable because he specifically in that final mock draft noted that Joe Douglas would probably take Becton over Tristan Wirfs because he would go for the upside, which is exactly what happened. The Jets did not take Tristan Wirfs. They took Mekhi Becton, and you know, unfortunately, years later, they are regretting that decision. 2021, not a shock, had him taking Zach Wilson. Everybody had him taking Zach Wilson. Who cares? 2022, he had them taking both Sauce Gardner at 4 and Garrett Wilson at 10, which, that's not like the most, they weren't the most shocking picks, but getting both of them right, especially when a lot of people thought the Jets might take Kayvon Thibodeau or that they might go in a different direction at 10, maybe with Jamison Williams or a different receiver, that's pretty notable. And then this past year, he had them taking Lucas Van Ness, who is an edge rusher. Now, of course, the Jets took Will McDonald. Lucas Van Ness was taken two picks before the Jets at 13 by the Green Bay Packers. I do not remember, Mike, I don't know if you remember, but I don't remember a single other mock draft that I saw the Jets taking an edge rusher last year besides Peter Schrager.
Not in the first round.
Right, not in the first round. Nobody saw that coming. So, yeah, he didn't get Van Ness right, but I look, that tells me that there's probably a good chance the Jets would have drafted Van Ness if he was there at 15, and then they might have just resorted to Will McDonald because he was the next best player on their board. Clearly, they were thinking edge. Nobody else thought that. Peter Schrager did. So, all of that being said, Peter Schrager, when he says something about the Jets and specifically with mock drafts, we should probably listen because his track record speaks for itself. He has been hammering home Brock Bowers to the Jets. Of course, they're still, you know, a week before his final mock draft comes out. There's time to change. I believe this time last year, he said the Jets were taking Broderick Jones until he switched it to Lucas Van Ness. So it's fair to say that there's still stuff that can change. But absolutely, I mean, if he's saying Brock Bowers to the Jets, I'm going to believe it. It seems legitimate to me. You know, we've talked about it a lot in the past, Mike. I'm happy with Brock Bowers. It's not my preferred option. I have other players and other routes I'd want the Jets to take. But I'm at a point where I'm at peace with probably any realistic, again, besides like edge rusher, for including that in realistic, any realistic route the Jets take, I'm probably going to be happy. If they draft one of the top tackles, I'm going to be happy. You know, I may not be high on someone like Brian Thomas Jr., or at least as high as others, but if they take him at 10, I'm not going to hate it. I'm not going to lose my mind. I'm not going to dislike it as much as I disliked the Will McDonald pick last year. And that includes Bowers. I'm not, you know, sold on Brock Bowers being the best pick for the Jets, but if they draft him at 10, if they move down and draft him, even better. But if they draft him at 10, I'll be happy with that. I don't think that means anything about, you know, Tyler Conklin. I've seen some people, you know, throwing that out there like Tyler Conklin's great. I love Tyler Conklin. I think I'm higher on Tyler Conklin than most, but he's not a reason to not draft Brock Bowers, especially entering the last year of his deal. You can absolutely play both of them. I know we saw Jackal in chat said that Hackett is going to waste Bowers. And I do think there's
so what? Don't draft anybody, do nothing. Is Hackett going to waste them?
It's a fair concern to be concerned about how Nathaniel Hackett will use Brock Bowers. I would be concerned about that as well. The good news is if he does fuck up and he does not use him right, he's gone, and Brock Bowers is still here for the next 4 years, hopefully. So I wouldn't let their current offensive coordinator dictate that. I think you can absolutely get a lot of use out of Brock Bowers, whether it's with Hackett or whether it's not with Hackett in the future. I just want to talk about this because it's really, really interesting how successful and kind of spot on Peter Schrager has been with these Jets picks and how much – I mean, it's not just Schrager. Like, Bowers has been the betting favorite to go to the Jets for a while now. It's almost close to even money, which is – crazy for like the 10th overall pick. That's usually you don't usually get those like early in the draft being like the 10th overall pick. A lot of variables. I think he was like plus 100 last time I saw, which is super high. So there's a lot of smoke there. I don't know if it's going to happen. Maybe we'll talk about it in a sec when we get to our bold predictions, but there's definitely a lot of smoke around Brock Bowers to the Jets.
And the thing too, I just want to finally break that streak of Aaron Rodgers not having any first-round skill position players. I still think it's going. Yeah. Aaron Rodgers in his entire career has never had a first round pick be a skill position player.
Well, you mean like, well, Garrett Wilson now.
Well, Garrett, well, I mean, before, like when he was the quarterback,
sure.
Nobody said, let's use a first round pick on a wide receiver or a tight end.
Yes, yes. They have not drafted a skill.
I think JerMichael Finley might have been the last one. Since then, nothing. And JerMichael Finley hates Aaron Rodgers. So, yeah. Nothing since then. And you don't think Aaron Rodgers, like, think about all the times they were close to a Super Bowl and they need to be pissed as free safeties and offensive linemen were picked instead of guys who could help him. He's like, can somebody help me? And then finally, the Jets have an opportunity last year, and then we know what happened there. Will McDonald, obviously.
And speaking
get Aaron Rodgers, just somebody. Like, look, dude, you're 40. We'll get you a first-round guy. Because I believe when he threw a touchdown to Mercedes Lewis during the end of his Packers tenure, Mercedes Lewis, who at the time was like 57 years old, and he's been playing forever, that was the first-round pick he'd ever thrown a touchdown pass to.
Wow.
In his whole career. Crying out loud. Get this guy more guys. Now then you can have three because Williams was a top 10 pick. And then Garrett Wilson and Brock Bowers. Finally, some juice on the outside for him. Look,
you know, speaking of Rodgers, he was in the facility when they brought in Brock Bowers for a visit on Monday because Monday was the start of the Jets offseason program. Now I'm not going to put on my, you know, Aaron Rodgers conspiracy theory hat here and be like, oh, did the Jets plan to do that? You know, the Brian Windhorst meme or whatever, like what's going on here? I'm just saying that I wouldn't be surprised if Rodgers happened to, you know, strike a conversation with Brock Bowers, talk to him a little bit. And if Aaron Rodgers came away loving Brock Bowers, I don't think that hurts Brock Bowers' case to be drafted by the Jets. It definitely does not hurt.
And that's not, I know people would use that as like, oh, you're drafting Aaron Rodgers' buddies again. You're doing whatever Aaron Rodgers says. But like, this is not that. This is not Randall Cobb.
It's perfectly reasonable for the starting quarterback of your team to be in the building and talk to a potential pass catcher that you're looking to draft in the first round. I think that'd be the case on any team.
And it's not like Aaron Rodgers, I don't think he's purposely going out of his way to say, oh, this guy is not good. Let me sign him over the good guy.
Right.
Like, he's doing it for friendship reasons.
They signed Mike Williams and not Marquez Valdes-Scantling. That should tell you all you need to know. They've at least corrected some of the mistakes that they made leaning on Rodgers' buddies too much last year.
I'm just thinking about a future in which they actually do take, like, Dallas Turner
or Jared Verse. Why? Don't even think of that, Mike. Don't even think of that.
You use the best player available.
Here's the I don't even think.
You know, this young man's a very good athlete because Saleh calls everybody young man. Yeah. So
we just love his juice coming off the edge. You know, he's got a hot motor. He's a great kid, whatever, all that shit. The same
loves
stuff.
Ball.
Right. Same stuff that they're saying about a guy in Will McDonald who's gonna play 25% of snaps next year. Like
at age 25.
Right, age 25. Like, no, don't even put that in the universe, Mike. It's not going to happen. It's going to be – I'm confident sitting here now, and we could go to the predictions in a second. We'll give our actual predictions. But I'm confident sitting here now and saying the Jets are going to draft either a wide receiver, an offensive tackle, slash guard, if you want to put Fautanu in that conversation, whatever, or Brock Bowers. I'm very confident saying one of those three things will happen.
Well, let's talk about things that may not happen, but boy, would it be interesting if they did. And you know what? Crazy stuff happens during the draft every single year. Who thought the Texans would get CJ Stroud and Will Anderson? Weird stuff happens.
True.
So if we're going to get a little weird here, let's go and think about some, I don't know why I put that much sauce on it. Jeez.
I don't know what that was.
I don't know what I like started to do like a Rocky Horror voice or something.
Yeah, I don't like it. Don't do it again. That was terrible.
Okay. You don't want me to do, it was like, oh God, what's that guy? He does like the Mystery Science Theater 3000 things. Oh, no crap.
Dad would know. I don't know.
Svengoolie. That's what I mean.
Dude, my dad loves Svengoolie. I'm not even lying. Like, he has like a Svengoolie action figure. I'm not even joking.
Tell him to watch Mystery Science Theater 3000. We can chat about it.
He watches. This is such a niche conversation that 99% of people will not get. But anyway, go on.
Yeah, if you love Mystery Science Theater, put something in the chat and I will salute you because you are a man or woman of culture. So moving off that, now that I got that saucy impression out of the way, we're going to go talk about some pretty bold Jets draft predictions, stuff that it would not necessarily moving heaven and earth to make it happen, not necessarily destroying the entire draft or, oh my God, how could we have seen this? But stuff that would be out of the ordinary. And I know Justin had one in particular he was telling me about where he thinks that there's one particular offensive lineman that even though he might not be considered everybody's favorite pick at number 10, he's just way too high on.
Yes. Yeah. Look, I mean, it's, I don't even know if these are, these are genuinely my predictions. So I know we're like labeling it as bold predictions, but these are three things that I genuinely believe have a really good chance to happen during the draft. And I don't know if that makes, if they're bold, I don't know, but this is what I think is going to happen. In the first round, I don't think the Jets draft Brock Bowers. I know there's so much smoke. I know Peter Schrager's saying it. I know that a lot of people saying it. Vegas is saying it. All the betting
odds. The last 10 minutes going, oh, Peter Schrager's clairvoyant.
No, we just talked about it. I don't think it's going to happen. I think maybe a team, you know, trades up. Maybe the Colts or whoever trade up in front of the Jets draft Bowers. Maybe the Jets just pass on him. I think whether it's at 10 or in a trade down, the Jets draft Troy Faletanu from Washington. That's what I believe will happen. I believe that, well, I mean, look, I can give it from my perspective why I think he'd be a really good pick. I don't know if this is what the Jets would be feeling, but I imagine if they do this, they'd agree. They need offensive line depth, desperately need offensive line depth. You can land a playmaker, another playmaker, a wide receiver, whatever it's going to be on day two. And that player can immediately step into a big role. That is how good this wide receiver class is. You want to draft, I mean, whoever, I don't know, Roman Wilson, whoever you throw out there, if they trade back into the second round or even get somebody on in the third round, they can absolutely land somebody who could fill that wide receiver three role alongside Alan Lazard. You'd be okay there. I'm not confident saying that you can draft the same caliber of offensive lineman or whatever in the third round. I think Faletanu is somebody who I talked about this, I think, last week, can immediately compete for a starting job as a rookie. I'm not sure that John Simpson is locked into a starting left guard job. I saw Rich Samini say something about Morgan Moses not even being locked into a right tackle job, which, whatever. I think that Moses is probably going to start at right tackle, but worst case scenario, you bring in Faletanu, he can compete for reps at left guard. Hell, he can compete for reps at right tackle. And he's also insurance behind Tyron Smith at left tackle, considering that Tyron Smith has not played more than 13 games in almost a decade. Whoever you draft, whatever offensive lineman you are drafting, if you draft one at 10, they are going to play as a rookie. They're going to play as much, probably more, than Will McDonald did last year. And he's going to be playing a much more important position and not just be playing part-time. They'll be starting games because Tyron Smith's not playing 17 games. If Tyron Smith plays 17 games, awesome. That's fine. Like, you still need a guy to replace him in the future. I would be stunned. Morgan Moses is coming off an injury. Elijah Vera Tucker has had two season-ending injuries in the last two seasons. You have so many injury concerns around that offensive line, and right now, your depth is not good. Wes Schweitzer is fine. Carter Warren and Max Mitchell are fine fourth tackles. Neither of them should be a top swing tackle. Your depth is not good. Even if they bring back someone like a Connor McGovern, they still need help. What was it, Xavier Newman, Chris Glazer? Like, those are the other guys that we're talking about right now. They need help. Troy Faletanu is a really good player. Also just reminds me of somebody that Saleh and specifically Joe Douglas would fall in love with. Like, he's got that nasty demeanor. Dude is he is everything I think that Joe Douglas normally would want in an offensive lineman and everything that Robert Saleh loves to coach in a player. I think he'd be a really good player and a really good pick for the Jets. And I know a lot of people might not love him at 10. I think I'm a lot higher on him than most. I like him. He's very close to the Olafoshana tier for me, if not in that same tier, just because of that versatility. I like him more than Taliesi Fuaga, and because of the versatility, I think is a big reason why. And I also think he'd be a really good fit with the changing in the scheme that they're going with along their offensive line with more of a power run approach. I think he fits in alongside guys like, you know, like Tyron Smith, like John Simpson, like Morgan Moses, more than somebody like an Olafoshana would. So that's who I think the Jets are going to take. I think it might surprise some people. But that's my prediction. Maybe it's a 10. Maybe it's a trade down. I think they take Troy Faletanu.
I think if the Jets do go lineman in the first round, they're going to draft one of two archetypes. One of them being the do everything, jack of all trades kind of guy. Because honestly, looking at Faletanu, not to be lazy with the comparisons, but I do see a lot of Elijah Vera Tucker.
Yeah.
I know, sure. I'm not the first person to do that, but Pac-12 guy, versatile, strong, plays a great, like, it's the similarities are right there. And I know he's been banged up, but when he's been healthy, I don't think anybody has anything bad to say about Elijah Vera Tucker as a tackle in this league.
Nope.
So a Vera Tucker clone, and that seems to be the one thing that they got right on the offensive line. Well, let's just do more of that.
Yep.
I think that'll be number one. And number two, because I don't trust Joe Douglas yet. You get back here, Joe. I trust your free agency spending, for lack of a better word, and your ability to identify veterans on one-year deals. I trust that. And I trust your trading generally. I do not trust your hype draft picks because this guy places so much of an emphasis on upside. And again, everybody does as a GM, and there's the age-old debate at every position, quarterback, tackle, no matter what. Do you want the finished product or do you want the upside? And both have worked out. Peyton Manning was the finished product. Ryan Leaf was the upside. Who was better? Peyton Manning. Sam Darnold was the finished product. Josh Allen was the upside. Who was better? Like, there's never a consensus. It's a 50-50 split. If the Jets want the finished product, Fautanu's their guy. Mm-hmm. If they want the upside, which I still think they can do possibly with a trade down into like the mid-teens range, I feel like they're going to take a look at Amarius Mims. Mm. And Amarius Mims from Georgia is – people are going to say Mekhi Becton comps, and you know what? I get it. They're warranting. Yeah. But there are good things, though, because he actually had the lowest pressure rate allowed of any tackle in the league, when he played. And he played at Georgia, so those were SEC guys. And he was just bowling them over. And he's 6'8", 340, and he's pretty fast for a lineman. I mean, that doesn't happen too much. You don't really get linemen that are that versatile, that strong, that big, with room to grow because he's a young guy who's kind of inexperienced. So that might be half of what Amarius Mims could be in the pros. If that's half, you're like, oh, wait till we get him to 100%. I get all that. Do you know how many games Amarius Mims has started in the pros? 8 in college.
In the pros. 8. Whoa, he's really experienced. Wow.
He might start 8 games in the pros looking at his injury history, smooth transition, because Mims has been banged up for most of his college career. An ankle injury last year, right when he was starting to crest, where you're like, oh, he might make a move, and then ankle injury kind of ruined his stock. So the risks are plentiful. And again, the Jets saw with Becton. Now, Becton at least didn't get hurt too much in college. Mm-hmm. And I guess the thought was he's just so big that he could withstand the physical demands of the position. And then turns out his legs just gave out. Mims has already shown problems with that. I mean, he's barely started in college. But the upside, like if you look at what this guy, if he stays healthy, he's already proven to be a great pass blocker. Maybe the best outside of all best pass blocker in this class, in my opinion. And you can't take that lightly in a throwing league. You can't just discard that. But man, if the Jets move off Mekhi Becton, they get another big dude with injury concerns who may have to move again because he was a right tackle in college. So if they move him around again, I mean – there's a lot of Mekhi Becton signals going off, but I don't think Joe Douglas can resist. He's addicted to it. You know, Robert Saleh's addicted to edge rushers. He wants 25 on one team. Joe Douglas is addicted to toolsy offensive line prospects. And I think Mims might be like, man, I need my fix. And he gets it in Mims.
I know I said before that I'd probably be happy with most of the routes the Jets take. This might be one of the only routes that I'd be like, oh, man, there's so many other things that they could have done. And that's not to say that Amarius Mims isn't a talented prospect, because obviously he is. You're just taking such a risk when I don't think you need to take that risk right now at all. Not only the injury concerns, but like you said, Mike, he started 8 games in his entire college career. Like that's not somebody that I want to bank on with a top 15 pick. I especially
go block Myles Garrett. Okay.
Right. Like, I mean, he's a freaking monster. He's almost 6'8", over 6'7", 344 pounds, just a freak. And at 5'07", 40-yard dash at that size is very, very good. Dude's ridiculous. And then there's where the Mekhi Becton comps come into play, because Mekhi Becton was the same way, except weirdly, Mekhi Becton probably had fewer injury concerns coming into the league. The injury concerns are more just about, hey, can he hold up at this size? And Becton was a little bit bigger than Mims. I think he was probably like 355, three something like that. Mims
had some more bad weight, though, if that makes any sense. Like, yeah. I mean, he's done. Mims is a little more cut. Yeah. So.
And we definitely saw that.
I don't want to call Mekhi Becton fat here, but I mean, I'm just trying to.
No, you're right. You're not wrong. Being honest. We saw that in the NFL. Now, he obviously slimmed down this past year and he got himself in really good shape, but that was absolutely a fear at some points during his Jets tenure. So, yeah, like. I don't love Amarius Mims for the Jets. It definitely would not be my pick. I can see it happening because of the size and because of the upside. And I could see Joe Douglas being like, look, we don't expect this guy to play year one. We want him to be, you know, somebody that we could develop behind an all-pro future Hall of Famer in Tyron Smith and, you know, a consummate pro and a great player and a great dude in Morgan Moses. I get that. And honestly, that would probably be a good landing spot for Amarius Mims. I can honestly see him being good with the Jets. Like, I think that's a really good fit for him. As from the Jets' perspective, though, there's just so many other options that I would rather the Jets go. I'd rather they take Brian Thomas Jr., and I'm not particularly high on Brian Thomas Jr. I just think that he'd be a better – I think he's a better prospect overall than Amarius Mims, and I think he also provides a much bigger immediate impact to the Jets while also being somebody who I'm moderately confident will be a pretty good player in the NFL, at least have a role, at least have a big role, whereas Mims could – you know, he could be out of the league in 5 years. Like, I don't know. My second – bold prediction that I'm going to go with. So I went to day one with the first one. Next one, I think the Jets will draft a quarterback. And I'm going to call my shot here. I'm going to say I think the Jets draft Jordan Travis out of Florida State on day three, probably fourth or fifth round. They don't have a fifth round pick right now. They have two fours. That second four is like at the end of the fourth round. I think it was the one they got in the Moses deal. It was the compensatory pick. So if they move around, maybe they go into the fifth round. I believe the Jets have met with four quarterbacks, if I'm correct, three quarterbacks. They've met with three quarterbacks, at least on top 30 visits. Jordan Travis, Michael Pratt, who's the other guy. I'll say with this, I'm going to predict Jordan Travis, but I'll throw out like a little, like it could be Michael Pratt as well. I think they'll draft one of those two guys, but I'll stick with Travis. And the third one is like a UDFA guy, Michael Hyers out of Samford, who I know next to nothing about. Those are the three guys that they've had for top 30 visits. I do think there's a very good chance that the Jets draft one of Travis or Pratt on day three, early on day three. I'm going to say it's Travis. Of course, he has the injury concerns. He had that brutal leg injury his last year at Florida State, but dude was one of the most dynamic and electric players his last year. He was ACC Player of the Year, was legitimately going to lead Florida State probably to the national championship, or at least to the college football playoff before his injury, and that was very unfortunate. But he's someone I think you could bring in, develop as your QB3 behind Aaron Rodgers, behind Tyrod Taylor. I'm not sure, and I've talked about him before on the show. I'm not sure he's ever going to be a true, you know, quarterback one, a true starting quarterback in the NFL. But I think at the very least, he could develop into a cheap backup. And it's a similar thing for Michael Pratt. And I think that's really what the Jets should be looking for, unless they go Joe Milton or something. You're not really going to get a guy on day three with the upside to develop into a starter. So I think getting a cheap backup on an affordable contract, someone like a Jordan Travis, Michael Pratt makes sense. I'm calling my shot. I'm going to say they draft Jordan Travis on day three, fourth or fifth round.
Let me just clarify to get rid of some Michael Hyers slander, because you don't know.
I don't know anything about Michael Hyers.
It's weird because, or do you know how big he is? He's 6'1", 215, and they keep calling him the FCS Josh Allen. I'm like, well, Josh Allen's not 6'1", 2". The whole point of Josh Allen is he was that big.
Right.
The point, though, is he's like a scrambler and crazy arm angles and all that. 74% completion in 2 years at Samford. That's pretty good. Okay. 50 touchdowns, I believe 54, actually, excuse me, and 12 picks. That's pretty good.
Cool.
So it's worth a gamble.
This sounds more like a Kyler Murray to me than Josh Allen because of the size.
Yeah, he's a little bigger. And again, when I was watching Samford film, I mean, I think they were filming. I think like somebody's grandmother was using like a camcorder.
Shout out to you for watching Samford film. That's crazy.
you ever see on America's Funniest Home Videos like that when the guy would get like hitting the balls on a camcorder? Like it's that quality of video.
Jesus Christ.
It's that level. I'm like, how can I evaluate a pro prospect on this thing?
Yeah.
But anyway, looking at Travis, obviously the big concern is the health, because he broke his leg in his last game at Florida State, and boy, did Florida State get screwed in the playoff. I'm not a Florida State fan, but I mean, man, they would have been in the playoff if he didn't get hurt, because they won out, and then they didn't put him in because they're like, oh, well, they're going to get killed without Jordan Travis, and they did, but still. So I feel bad for him there, but very similar to Michael Hyers, in that great athlete, throws from all sorts of arm angles, and he has a willingness to go downfield. How many times do guys have a great arm, especially these day three guys who are just trying to make it in the league, and it's just check down, check down, check down, you know, 16 of 20, but they throw for 90 yards. Travis will rip it if you give him a chance, and I like that mindset. I think that the Jets don't do enough quarterback run stuff where they really get the most out of him. Not that he's like a running quarterback, quote unquote, but part of his appeal is the athleticism and the legs. And unless the Jets, I don't trust Nathaniel Hackett to coordinate one offense, number one, let alone put in a second offense with Jordan Travis where they could get some stuff out of his legs. I also think the whole package quarterback thing is really stupid.
Yeah, I hate when a team does that. I wouldn't expect him to play. I will say, though, they did sign Tyrod Taylor. And I know Tyrod Taylor isn't the young guy he used to be. He used to be a lot more mobile than he is now.
Tyrod could play a whole game not scrambling at all, or not running at all, and still win you a game with his accuracy.
He can. And I would have said, I probably would have said something different like 7 years ago. Now he's a bit older. He's definitely more of a pocket passer at this point, at this stage of his career. But he's still got legs. Like, he was still running a bit with the Giants last year, and he had to, obviously.
Right, but I don't think if Tyrod played, they're going to do like speed options and design run for him and stuff like that. No. Travis, I feel like you might need to get the most out of him.
Well, hopefully Jordan Travis wouldn't play anyway.
But you have to consider these things, especially considering what happened last year. Well, Zach Wilson's not going to play, so blah, 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 and then what do you know?
Well, Zach Wilson was QB2. If you went into the year saying, all right, Tim Boyle's not going to play, I would have been like, yeah, it would take a disaster for Tim Boyle to play.
And then he played.
We got a disaster, but like, it would have taken a disaster, and we did get one.
I'm going to say 1.5 bowl predictions because they're kind of in tandem with one another. One of them is trading up to day two, for a wide receiver, just because there's so many guys in that range, like a Keon Coleman, a Ricky Pearsall, a Jalen Polk, even a Tez Walker if they want to get kind of spicy. Like, there's too many guys in that range. And I feel like if they want to add another receiver, that's where they'll do it, a new wide receiver 3. And now looking at who wide receiver 4 would be, you'd think it'd be Alan Lazard, but I believe they're going to do a Brock Osweiler with the Texans and the Browns trade, attach a future pick, and say, get out of here, Alan Lazard. I think they finally just said, because they pretty much already said that he's not going to be here for very long. Didn't Sala say, like, we got him for the next year and a half?
Yeah, he literally said that we got him last year, I believe, when he was benched. They said, we got him. Sala straight up said, we got him for the next year and a half. And, you know, because that's the first time the Jets can officially cut him and not lose money. So
exactly. So I feel like they know that Alan Lazard's tenure with the Jets. And again, I was so high on Alan Lazard coming in, higher than most, because he did do a lot of things. He was not like this in Green Bay. He was not a pro bowler, but you saw a solid role player who had some big plays downfield, who made some big catches in the playoffs. I'm like, all right, and then now he's linked up with Aaron Rodgers again, and he just got all the talent sucked out of him like a ghost, just right out of his mouth. And now that happened, I don't see really anything – of value in Lazard as a player. Not to sound harsh, but I mean, like, what would a good season look like for Alan Lazard next year? What, like 20 catches?
Assuming he's wide receiver 4, which I would hope he's going to be wide receiver 4. Right now he's wide receiver 3, but assuming he's wide receiver 4, yeah, something like 30 catches. I'd say 30 catches and throwing like 4 or 5 touchdowns, we'll say.
Even that's 5 touchdowns is pretty –
watch him like a successful, like a really good season from him in his role as like probably you'd hope to be like a red zone guy.
And that's high end for an $11 million a year receiver. So instead of just prolonging this, I feel like the Jets might just say, you know what, let's just get him out of here and just admit that it was a mistake and start fresh. Because it's not going to be good for him either, because he knows the staff doesn't believe in him. He's not going to get time. He's probably going to be up like this marriage is. It's like Zach Wilson, where it's bad for everybody. So let's just eat it, and let's just say that didn't work. Maybe he goes to some random team. Maybe he goes to Carolina and he's good or something. I don't know, but I feel like the time's already over for Alan Lazard, and I feel like they may expedite the process of getting rid of him right now.
Yeah, I think they want to. I think if the Jets receive any kind of potential offer, they'll do it. I guess the hesitation I have is that they might already have to do the same thing with Zach Wilson. So it's a lot to, you know, basically trade away two guys who are complete net negatives to your team right now in every possible way. And you're basically paying another team to take them, whether you're paying in salary, whether you're paying in draft capital. That's a lot. You know, I think they'd love to do it, and I would be very much on board with it. If they do that, you know, they probably need to maybe sign another receiver too, because I don't think I want Xavier Gibson and Jason Brownlee competing for wide receiver 4. In a year you're trying to win a Super Bowl, in a year where Mike Williams is an injury concern, and then your other guy is a day 2 pick, like, I would want more wide receiver help. I'm fully in favor of keeping Lazard around unless they go and, you know, if they draft like a Roma Dunze or something like that, cool. Yeah, all right, you can move on from Lazard at this point now. But if they wait until day three or day 2 to draft somebody like whoever it would be, like a Malik Washington or whoever, right, you know, on day 2, Yeah, I don't mind keeping Lazard around. I think he should be better. He's already going to count, even if you trade him, he's going to count like $9 million against the cap regardless. So he's kind of just, you're almost just kind of stuck with him for another year until you can move on. But I don't hate the idea. And I think the Jets, if they had the opportunity to, would definitely move on from him. So I guess we'll see. I'll go into my third prediction, though, because it's related to what we're talking about here. It's related to this. And my prediction is that the Jets will make a trade on day three of the draft, and that they will trade away a player. But I'm not talking Alan Lazard. I'm talking Zach Wilson, Mike.
I think
day three of the draft is the last day that Zach Wilson will be a member of the New York Jets. I think that's when they get a deal done. I don't know if it's going to be a situation where they have to, you know, pay another team, or they include like a future draft pick, but I can absolutely see a scenario where, you know, maybe they trade down or maybe they trade up or whatever and include Zach Wilson, or maybe they trade down and include Zach Wilson in that kind of a trade package, whatever, somewhere where they just kind of offload him as part of like a day three pick swap, or maybe you include like a future conditional pick, whatever. I think that's going to be the day that it happens, because you're going to see teams those first couple days kind of finalizing their quarterback depth charts. Day three is going to come around. I'm not talking like fourth or fifth round. I'm talking probably closer sixth or seventh round. And you're going to be seeing teams finalizing their quarterback depth charts. They're going to be looking at what quarterback, you know, what young quarterback prospects they might want to bring in on day three, or maybe even undrafted. And they're going to be weighing them against Zach Wilson and his contract. And that's when I think you'll see a team jump. At the very latest, it might happen after the draft, but I'm going to call my shot right now and say it's going to happen day three of the draft. That's when Zach Wilson will be traded. And I think part of that will be the Jets drafting Jordan Travis or Michael Pratt, you know, a round or two before they end up trading Zach Wilson. I think all of that combined, you'll end up with three quarterbacks going into undrafted free agency, whatever. Maybe they bring in another guy, maybe Michael Hyers, whoever. And I think that'll be the Jets quarterback room. But I think that Zach Wilson will be traded day three of the draft.
We talk a lot about asset management, or at least poor asset management, mostly with the Jets and Joe Douglas. If they had traded him at this time last year, you may have actually gotten a pick for him.
Yeah.
Like a pick of some, not like a third or anything, but like maybe some team flips you a fifth or a sixth. Maybe we'll roll the dice on him. Because at that point, too, it could have been, oh, Mike LaFleur sucks and the line sucks. Like you got a lot of excuses that you could have made for Zach Wilson. Now there's none. And there's really no way to justify spending any amount of capital on him, because no team's going to guarantee him a backup spot. So you're going to basically trade for a third string quarterback. And why the hell would I even do that?
Yeah.
Why can't I just sign a guy? Why can't I draft a guy in the sixth round? So boy, did the Jets bungle this. The entire Wilson's, everything's been bungled for 3 years with Zach Wilson. And maybe, I know Joe Douglas wants to win a trade. I know he's got some reputation, Trader Joe and all that, but I think at some point you just got to bite the bullet and go, all right, I'll take the L on this one. Like, let's just start over. That's why I feel like the Lazard trade might happen. I feel like there's a lot of, to be fair, actual recognition that, all right, I screwed a lot of this up and I don't have a lot left. This is Joe Douglas talking. I don't have a long time left. If this season doesn't go well, I'm gone. Like, let's just say, all right, this didn't work, this didn't work, this didn't work. Let's just get rid of him. Let's just pretend that never happened. Rodgers didn't do it. Just new start, brand new year. And you can't do that with Zach Wilson because he doesn't want to be there. They don't want him there. Players don't really like him, I think. Not like they not like they hate him, but I don't think like he's a guy that everybody's rallying around right now. So just for his sake. For our sake, for everybody's sake, do something. Maybe send him closer to Utah. I don't know. Maybe send him to the Raiders. I don't know. Never mind. Antonio Pierce would hate Zach Wilson, but
that would be wild. Before you get into your last prediction really quick, I want to get to a comment here from Franco on YouTube.
I was just about to bring that up.
Boom. All right. Franco says, who's
I don't have any more predictions. Those are my two. So I was about to bring in.
Oh, you don't got a third? Oh, hell yeah. All right. Let's talk about this then. Franco says, who is a wide receiver you would trust in round three and round four that would be ready to compete and start at the wide receiver three spot? My guy has been, and I've talked about him before, and I think he's going to be available in round three. I don't know about round four, but I think he's available in round three. Javon Baker from UCF. Big, big Javon Baker fan, former Alabama recruit. I've compared him in the past to another one of my favorite wide receivers in the NFL, Kendrick Bourne. I just think he has a super, super high floor, and he's going to be a good pro. I don't think he's ever going to be a star, but he's somebody that I think I trust as a route runner, as a blocker. He has sure hands, just an all-round, well-rounded wide receiver who I think – can easily step in, compete early in his career, and should have a 10-year NFL career. That's somebody, if you can get him on round three, absolutely. I don't think he's ever going to be a wide receiver one. I don't think he has that kind of upside, but I think he steps in and immediately contributes to this Jets team as your wide receiver three. That's my guy. I don't know what you think about Jevon Baker, Mike. We've talked about him a little bit.
I mean, I certainly don't think he's a day two guy.
You think he's day three?
Probably, and not like probably lower. Where do I have him on my big board? Let's see. Okay.
That's a hot take. I think he's at like 43 or 45.
I have him 126. So,
ooh, you are really low on Jevon. Whoa, hold on a second. What is going on here?
That's still fourth round.
I think. Hold on, I got to see. I think it was ESPN had him at like 40 something.
I'm going to the last pick of the fourth round of the Niners in my mock. So a little preview.
I don't like that, man. I don't like that.
I just don't feel – I don't see the great speed.
He doesn't have the great speed. You're right.
He ran a 4.54, and I'm like, okay, that's pretty – and he's not a big guy. He's like 6'1", 202, but
that's why
he plays like a big guy, but he doesn't really have – he's like a weird player. This is totally not his fault. But there are certain prospects that like sometimes will taint your, viewing of other guys later because you're like, oh, he looked like Mims and Becton. We were talking about that earlier. Oh, he looks at Mekhi Becton. Sure. He's not this big, but I just see a lot of like N'Keal Harry making crazy jump ball catches at Arizona State.
No, he's so much a better route runner. He's a better route runner,
but he's smaller too. So he's just a weird. He's a weird guy, but like, I feel like the Niners can make him almost like a Jawan Jennings guy where they get him the ball a lot and get him moving. But
he's smaller than it. Honestly, he's a much better yak guy than either of them. I mean, Jennings is not a bad yak guy, but I think Baker's a really good yak guy. Honestly, like I know his athletic testing numbers aren't very good. He's a better athlete than that. Like I never got the sense watching him that he was a bad athlete by any means. What was his RAS score? I want to look that up because that's one of my dudes in this class and you're disrespecting him right now and I don't like it. All right, his RAS wasn't very good. What was Kendrick Bourne's RAS? I'm actually very Baker's RAS was 7.84.
I mean, I've seen a lot worse. Wasn't Garrett Wilson's in the sixes or something? So
Kendrick Bourne's RAS was 4.96. Just throw that out there, right? So RAS is not everything. You can have a long and successful NFL career as a well-rounded wide receiver three and not be a good athlete. And I think that's what Baker is.
If I'm looking at the third round, now, to be fair, Jermaine Burton, I believe, is a third-round player. I do not want the Jets drafting him because he had an arrest for some...
I don't think they would draft him.
Yeah, not savory things. And I think the scout had a good quote. They said, imagine being a guy who is too much of a headache for the coaches of Georgia and Alabama when you're that good.
It sounds like he's falling because of that stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if he falls till day three,
Yeah, talent-wise, he's worth it, but I'm not – I've seen a lot of things I don't really like about Jermaine Burton. Mm-hmm. Looking at day three, I could give you a couple guys right now who are a little higher on my big board. I like Brendan Rice a lot.
Okay.
A little more vertical, a little quicker, still nice hands.
He did have a top 30 visit with him. So
he did. And if he's one-tenth the player his dad is, that's an amazing pick. So those that don't know, he is Jerry Rice's son. So.
I get more N'Keal Harry vibes from him than I do Jevon Baker.
Because Rice, I guess the thing, though, too, is he was open a little bit more because of how USC.
Yeah. Right?
But by the way, having watched Caleb Williams, Lincoln Riley is on fraud watch. That offense is disgusting. It's barely football. I feel bad for Caleb Williams because
it's just like a bunch of RPO spread, like air raid shit. Like
it is that's a Mickey Mouse offense.
Yeah.
That's one of my concerns with Caleb is it's very different from what he's going to do in the pros. But again, if you're super talented, Kyler, you can overcome that. Jalen Hurts, you can overcome that. So I like Rice, Jalen McMillan, who
I like Jalen McMillan.
He's kind of getting a little Ringo Starred a little bit in terms of he's the least popular of, there's Penix and Adunze and Jalen Polk, but Jalen McMillan on a better team, not a better team, but a team that would have given him a bigger role, I should say. Mm-hmm. Probably a little bit higher. I like him. He's shifty, good hands. Perfect, like, third-round slot-adjacent guy. And then also, this is just because physically he's so different. Johnny Wilson out of Florida State, because Johnny Wilson is 6'7" as a wide receiver.
Yeah.
And 230. Yeah. And the concern I had was that he was going to be like a Chase Claypool guy, where he's like half a receiver and half a tight end, and he's not really good at either. But he ran pretty well at the combine, like faster than I thought he would.
4.52.
4.52, and his agility times are okay. So I'm like, all right, I think he could stick at wide receiver. I mean, you want Lazard to be a red zone guy. Can you get a better red zone guy than a guy who's 6'7" with a longer wingspan? I mean, he looks like a guy who should be playing like power forward in the NBA.
Yeah.
Not play wide receiver. So now he's not a good route runner, and he's obviously not going to be super nuanced. If he was nuanced with his route running at that size, he would have been pick number one. But I like him as a third round pick, especially if Rodgers just gets it anywhere near his catch radius. I think he makes something happen with it.
Third is definitely rich for Johnny Wilson for me. I just think he's a lot more of a project. I'm just not a fan of jump ball receivers in general. I think I've realized that about myself, unless you are like really good at other things too. Maybe there's a defined role for them in the NFL, but I think more often than not, you have a higher bust rate with players like that in the NFL. I do like Brendan Rice more than I like Johnny Wilson, although I think it's similar with him where I think he still needs to work on his technical refinement. Like one
just
is
such an outlier physically. Like you can't teach that.
So. I think he needs to work on his route running. I'm also like, again, part of this was the system he played in, but he didn't really have to consistently beat press in college. I know he's a big guy, but that's a concern for me where you have a bigger guy who's not a great route runner, who's not proven that he can beat press.
And he wasn't getting the number one guy because Keon Coleman was.
Well, I'm talking about Brendan Rice here.
Oh, Brendan Rice.
And those are like, those are pretty prominent red flags for me that I would try and, you know, those raise eyebrows for me. It's not like a do not draft this guy under any circumstances, but they raise eyebrows. I think of the three you mentioned, I definitely like McMillan the most. He fits what I look for in more wide receiver prospects. Really good route runner, good hands, very honestly like Jacoby Myers type, like athleticism, just a really smooth player, really, really not an incredible athlete, but very smooth route runner. Absolutely somebody I would want in, you know, in the third round, even if he falls to the fourth. I don't know if he will, but it's just such a loaded wide receiver class. He could, but definitely somebody who got overlooked because you had Roma Dunze, because you had Jalen Polk. Like he was the third wide receiver in Washington, but I think he's a very good prospect.
And Gregory Freeman, again, president of the Malachi Corley fan club, is back with Malachi Corley. It bootleg Debo Samuel. Like he's not going to be Debo Samuel, but
yeah, he's awesome.
Does a lot of Debo adjacent thing. I guess the fear then is like, how many times do you see, hey, if we draft this player, he could be our version of this guy. And then he's never that good. So
I don't think there's a player that met with more teams on top 30 visits than Malachi Corley. I think he met with like half the league.
Because his playing style was so weird. They probably just needed to like, he's a hard guy to evaluate on tape.
Yeah. The Jets were one of the teams that met with him. Gregory also points out Keon Coleman. I'm not a Keon Coleman fan. I've been saying that all, you know, for the last few months.
Javon Baker fans.
So. I am a Javon. I think Javon Baker is a better prospect than Keon Coleman. I don't know if that's a hot take or not, but I think he absolutely is. Keon Coleman raises every single red flag for me in a wide receiver prospect. He was a fun college player, and I think he can be a good pro, but I have a lot of concerns about how his game will translate to the NFL. That's somebody who might give me N'Keal Harry vibes, not to compare every single physical jump ball receiver coming out in college, you know, to N'Keal Harry, but that's somebody I would kind of say gives me more N'Keal Harry vibes. Hold on. Okay. Look, we're not going to lie on this podcast. Keon Coleman's route running is not elite. That's an insane.
The hands are good. He's a physical receiver.
He's not a route runner. That is an insane statement.
Actually, when you give him – he's weird because if you give him the ball in his hands, he actually is, like, pretty
– he's not a bad athlete.
Like, he's – it's weird. Like, he's faster when he gets the ball than he is running routes.
You know, his 40 sucked, but his, like, 20-yard splits were pretty good. Like,
exactly. And how often are you going to run 40 yards in a dead sprint?
Yeah. I'm not concerned about that. The 40 time, I don't really care. That doesn't concern me. I just think he's – not a natural route runner by any means. He still looks like somebody who's kind of trying to find his way there. And that if you're drafting a guy day one or day two and you're a bad route runner, I don't want to draft a guy who's a bad route runner on day one or day two.
And Franco comes back. What about Malik Washington? The more I watch him, the more I'm impressed. I've talked about Washington in the past on the podcast. He was one of my weekly draft spotlights. Big fan, very quick, good hands. The thing I like too is he was really, really productive at Virginia. I think he had like at least eight catches or a touchdown in all but one game. And that was on a terrible team where he was the only guy who could do anything. So the fact that they went into the game knowing all you had to do was stop Malik Washington and they didn't, that's encouraging to me. But he's one of those guys like in baseball, he's just like one of those guys who hits 270 every year with 18 home runs or 16 home runs. Like he's never going to hit 40. He's just always going to come in and You know, he's going to go 1-for-4 with his base hit every day. Like, he's just a solid player. I just don't know physically with his size. Like, you're not mm-hmm. – and he doesn't have, like, Tyreek Hill crazy speed where you could overcome. And he's got, like, okay-ish speed.
Yeah.
But he's just a real – like, he's just a really solid – like, Wes Welker bootleggy guy. He's not going to be anywhere near that good, but that sort of mold.
He's a so better –
if you want a safe guy, I think he's safer than probably even, like, a Baker where there's some gamble – you know, gambling on the traits.
He's a better Xavier Gibson. That's what he is.
Yes.
He's a
Gibson's
better
a little faster, but yes.
Yeah. He is going to be a slot guy in the NFL who can also return punts and return kicks. And I think if the Jets are looking for an upgrade over Gibson, they'd consider it. I don't know if they are. I think that they're kind of with Gibson. They're like, hey, let's try and develop this guy into what Malik Washington is right now and could be. And I think they're more likely to go for a guy like, you know, not Javon Baker or Brendan Rice or whoever, somebody that can kind of fill a role that they don't have filled right now, because he's redundant to Gibson. Like, if you draft Washington, I don't think Gibson makes the team because his role is completely diminished if you draft him. And that's fine. And if they want to upgrade, they can do that. And I like Washington. He's a fun player. But yeah, I think he's just basically a better Xavier Gibson.
With that, though, I think we're going to call time on our penultimate show before the draft actually starts. So thank you guys for tuning in. We'll be here next Wednesday. We'll also be here around the draft time to have all the reaction and analysis of what the Jets end up doing at number 10 overall. We could see maybe they draft Javon Baker or Malachi Corley or who the hell knows. Maybe they take Chop Robinson, another defensive end. Maybe they take a punter. Who the hell knows?
Stop. No. We'll see if our predictions are right, too. I mean, we'll be back next week with the mock draft.
Maybe they get Torrey Taylor and they just say, we'll have the best punting team ever.
I can't say I've done analysis on the punters in this draft. I didn't know who that was until you said him.
Torrey Taylor's the Iowa guy. He's like the best.
Oh, I thought the Texas Tech guy was good too.
McNamara and him are the two. Yeah. Austin McNamara. Yeah. It's funny too, because I remember one time the Saints did that. They took a guy named Russell Erksleben, 11th overall, and they had him both kick and punt, where they were like, okay, that way we'll take him. And then we just got both of them set for however long, and then he lasted like 2 years and was out of the league. And then he got arrested on like financial crimes too. But
well, before that last one, I was gonna say sounds like Kari Vedvik, but yeah.
Yeah, I think he got some weird after football stuff, and it didn't work in football either. But his nickname was Thunderfoot, which is pretty cool. But other all than right. that,
this is a fun tangent.
Yes, it is. Read books, it's fun.
Cool, man.
So Justin, do you mind taking us home now?
Yeah, I can take us home. I'll give a couple cheap plugs to us right now. We have an interview with Donovan Jennings, who's a South Florida offensive tackle that already went up on the site. Should have a couple of more maybe coming up in the next week or so before the draft. Obviously, we'll update you guys next week when we do our show on Wednesday, because that will be our big mock draft. I guess I don't know if we fully have established how we're going to do it, but we're just going to both do mock drafts for the Jets and kind of go through kind of doing it a little bit similar today, predicting what will happen or what we think the Jets will do. That should be very, very fun. We've also had some other interviews go up on the Stack in the Box platform for FanSided, not on the Jet Press. You can check those out. I've done a couple with Rams safety Jason Taylor, AJ Barner, who's a tight end from Michigan. Got a few lined up with Michael Hall from Ohio State. Some pretty cool names. Might have one with Chris Jenkins from Michigan, son of course, Jets legend Chris Jenkins. Those will be going up on the Stack in the Box YouTube channel, so make sure you subscribe and check those out as well. But until next time here on the Jet Press, thank you for joining us on the show today. You can follow Mike on Twitter at @ByMikeWithJohnno. Follow me on Twitter at Justin T. Freed. Follow Jet Press at the Jet Press. Download Jet Press podcast wherever you get your podcast. Check us out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, hit that notification bell. You guys know what to do. We stream live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. Thank you all for listening to Jet Press podcast. I've been Justin Freed. That has been Mike Luciano. See you guys next time.
See you folks next week as the draft comes. Let's get hyped.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.